All right, let's dive into something really fascinating. Cybernetics and knowledge creation. We're going to explore some pretty mind-bending ideas about how we learn and understand the world. You might even start questioning some things you thought were set in stone.
What's so captivating about cybernetics is that it challenges our fundamental assumptions about knowledge. We tend to think of knowledge as a reflection of reality.
Okay.
But second-order cybernetics flips that notion on its head.
Okay, let's unpack that.
Yeah.
We're using an encyclopedia entry on cybernetics and knowledge theory by Ernst von Gleisersfeld as our guide. He's a big name in radical constructivism.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a key part of this deep dive. Can you break down these terms for me and for our listener?
Sure. Radical constructivism essentially argues that we don't passively absorb knowledge, we actively construct it based on our individual experiences and mental models. So our understanding of the world is less of a mirror and more like a unique creation.
So we're not just downloading information, we're actively building our own understanding. I'm already intrigued. But before we get too deep into radical constructivism, let's start with the basics. What exactly is cybernetics? I've heard it has to do with machines and feedback loops, which sounds a little technical.
It can sound that way, but it's actually pretty intuitive. The term cybernetics comes from the Greek word for steersman, emphasizing the concept of guiding or controlling systems. Think of a simple thermostat. It maintains a desired temperature using a feedback loop. The room temperature is fed back to the thermostat, which then turns the heating on or off accordingly.
So it's like a self-correcting mechanism.
Exactly.
But can you give me another example? Maybe one that's not quite so everyday? Help me and our listener. Wrap our heads around this feedback loop idea.
Certainly. Consider Watt's steam engine governor, a revolutionary invention. The faster the engine spins, the farther the governor's weighted arms swing outward, which then restricts steam flow and slows the engine down. This self-regulation through feedback was a major breakthrough in engineering.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this applies beyond just thermostats. It's a way for systems to maintain stability and achieve a desired state.
Right.
But how does this relate to knowledge creation? That seems like a pretty big leap.
It is a leap, but a fascinating one. Cybernetics brought a crucial shift in thinking by introducing the concept of purpose into scientific explanations. Instead of viewing systems as simply reacting to stimuli, cybernetics recognize that they could have goals and act to achieve them.
Hold on. Are you saying machines can have intentions now? It's quite a thought.
Well, intentions might be too strong a word, but cybernetics helped legitimize the idea that systems, even mechanical ones, can exhibit goal-oriented behavior. This was revolutionary because it moved beyond simplistic cause and effect models, acknowledging that systems can act in a purposeful way to maintain a specific state.
So it's not just about mindless reactions, but about systems striving towards a desired outcome. That makes me think about how we learn. Maybe we're not just passively absorbing information, but actively seeking out knowledge to achieve certain goals, like solving problems or understanding the world around us.
That's a great insight. And it leads us directly to second-order cybernetics, which focuses on the role of the observer in shaping knowledge. This is where things get really interesting. Instead of observing systems from the outside, second-order cybernetics says we need to observe systems that observe.
Whoa, that sounds like a mind-bender. So instead of just looking at a thermostat, we're looking at a person observing a thermostat. Are we going meta here?
In a way, yes. Second-order cybernetics examines how the observer's own perspective shapes what they perceive and understand. This brings us back to radical constructivism, which argues that knowledge is a construction of the mind rather than a direct reflection of reality.
So my understanding of a thermostat, or anything else for that matter, is shaped by my own experiences and how my brain interprets the information. It's not just some objective truth out there waiting to be discovered.
Exactly. And this idea has a long history in philosophy, which has always grappled with the problem of knowledge. Think of the age-old debate between naive realism, believing we perceive the world exactly as it is, and solipsism, the belief that only our own mind is real. Cybernetics offers a way out of these philosophical dead ends by acknowledging that our understanding is always shaped by who we are and how we perceive the world.
So we're all creating our own unique maps of reality based on our individual experiences. But does that mean there's no shared reality at all? Does everyone just live in their own bubble?
It's not that simple. While cybernetics emphasizes the role of the observer in constructing knowledge, it doesn't deny the existence of a shared reality. It simply recognizes that our access to that reality is always filtered through our own individual lenses.
That's a crucial distinction. It means we can still communicate and interact with each other, even if our understanding of the world isn't perfectly aligned. But how did this idea of knowledge as a construction lead to specific developments within cybernetics? Where do we go from here?
Well, from this foundation of second-order cybernetics emerged several key figures and their ideas, each with their own unique take on how knowledge is constructed. Let's start with Heinz von Forster and his radical approach to constructivism.
Okay, radical constructivism. I'm ready to get radical. Hit me with it.
Von Forster argued that there isn't one single objective reality out there waiting to be discovered. He believed we each construct our own realities based on our experiences and interactions with the world.
Multiple realities. That does sound pretty radical. Is there any evidence to support such a claim? It sounds like we're getting pretty far out there.
Von Forster drew on some intriguing evidence from neurophysiology, specifically the principle of undifferentiated coding. This principle states that nerve signals from our senses to the brain are essentially the same, differing only in intensity.
Wait, so my brain receives the same type of signal, whether I'm seeing a rainbow or hearing a symphony? How does it know the difference?
That's the key question. And it's where von Forster's ideas really challenge our assumptions. He argues that it's our brain that actively interprets these signals, constructing meaning based on our experiences and internal models. The world isn't inherently meaningless, but meaning is created by the observer. We are actively shaping the world we perceive.
So you're saying my brain is basically making up the difference between a rainbow and a symphony? That's wild. It makes you wonder how much of what we perceive is out there versus created by our own lines. This changes everything.
It certainly shifts our perspective. Radical constructivism suggests that our senses don't provide a direct, unfiltered view of reality. Instead, they provide the raw data that our brains actively interpret and shape into meaningful experiences.
So it's not just about seeing, hearing, or touching, but about how our brains make sense of those sensations. Our knowledge isn't about finding the right answer or perfectly mirroring reality, but about creating a model that helps us navigate our experiences.
Mm.
But if everyone is constructing their own reality, how do we even know what's real anymore? Does anything go?
That's where the concept of viability comes in. According to radical constructivism, knowledge isn't about being objectively true, but about being viable, meaning it works within our own experience. We constantly test and refine our understanding of the world based on whether it helps us effectively interact with our environment and achieve our goals.
So my understanding of the world might be different from yours.
Yeah.
But as long as it helps me navigate my life effectively, it's valid. There's no one right way to see things.
Precisely. Radical constructivism challenges the idea of a single absolute truth and suggests that knowledge is more about creating models that work for us, that help us make sense of our experiences and navigate the complexities of life. It's a pretty profound shift in perspective.
It certainly is. I'm already starting to see the world a little differently. But von Forster and his radical constructivism are just one piece of the puzzle, right? There are other key figures and concepts within second-order cybernetics that contribute to this idea of knowledge as a construction. What else is out there?
There is indeed much more to explore. Next, let's delve into the fascinating concept of autopoiesis, developed by Humberto Maturana, a biologist with a unique perspective on how systems, especially living ones, create and maintain themselves.
Okay, autopoiesis, another new term. Break that down for me and for our listener. What's so special about this concept?
Autopoiesis, meaning self-creation, emerged from Maturana's research on animal vision. He was fascinated by how organisms like frogs seem to create their own internal models of the world, rather than directly perceiving it.
So are we talking about some kind of biological virtual reality here? Are frogs living in the matrix?
It's not quite the matrix, but Maturana's findings did suggest that organisms weren't just passively reacting to external stimuli. They were actively creating their own interpretations based on internal processes. He coined the term autopoietic to describe systems that are self-creating and self-maintaining, constantly regenerating and defining themselves through their internal logic.
This sounds a lot like how radical constructivism describes knowledge as a construction. Is it fair to say these two ideas are connected?
They are very much aligned. Both emphasize the active role of the observer, or in this case, the living system, in shaping its understanding of the world. Autopoiesis adds a biological layer, showing how living beings create their own internal worlds that are separate from, but interact with their environment.
So our brains aren't just windows to the world. They're constantly constructing and updating their own models based on what's going on, both inside and outside. That's pretty amazing.
It is. And this has significant implications for how we understand ourselves. and our relationship to the world, if we're autopoietic systems, always defining and regenerating ourselves, it means we have a greater degree of autonomy and responsibility than we might have previously thought.
That's a powerful thought. It's like we're not just leaves blowing in the wind. We're actively shaping our own paths. But autopoiesis and radical constructivism are just two pieces of this complex puzzle, right? Where do we go from here?
There's one more key piece to explore, the Italian operational school, which takes a deep dive into the mental operations involved in creating meaning and using language.
Okay, the Italian operational school. Sounds intriguing. What's their unique perspective on all of this?
This school, led by Silvio Cicato, was fascinated by how we form concepts and how those concepts shape our understanding of the world. They were like the code breakers of knowledge creation, trying to understand the algorithms our minds use to build meaning.
So instead of just saying a chair is a thing you sit on, they were digging deeper into how we actually construct the concept of chair in our minds. What did they discover?
They challenged traditional approaches to semantics, which often relied on simple dictionary definitions. Instead, they focused on the process of concept formation, arguing that meaning is created through mental operations, not just by looking things up in a dictionary.
That makes sense. Defining a chair as something you sit on doesn't really capture the complexity of how we understand what a chair is. Does it? There are all sorts of chairs. And we can even imagine chairs that don't exist yet.
Exactly. They wanted to understand the mental steps, the operations, that allow us to create and understand any concept. And Cicato proposed a particularly innovative idea. He believed that attention is the fundamental material from which we build concepts.
Wait, attention? Like just paying attention to something. How can that be the building block of concepts?
He saw attention as an active, oscillating process, not just a passive spotlight. He believed this process creates pulses in our neural networks, and those pulses act as the raw material our minds use to form concepts.
So it's like our attention is constantly scanning the world, taking snapshots, and then using those snapshots to build up our understanding of things.
That's a great way to visualize it. The Italian operational school's emphasis on attention reinforces the idea that knowledge is something we actively create, not passively receive. And this shift in thinking has had a profound impact on various fields, far beyond the realm of machines and feedback loops.
I'm ready to see where this goes. We've talked about philosophy and biology, but how have these cybernetic ideas influenced other areas of study?
One area that's been deeply impacted is anthropology. Remember how cybernetics emphasizes the observer's role in shaping knowledge? Well, anthropologists studying different cultures realized this meant they couldn't pretend to be completely objective observers.
It's like that saying, you don't truly understand someone until you've walked a mile in their shoes. But in this case, it's more like you don't truly understand a culture until you recognize how your own perspective shapes your view of their shoes.
Exactly. Cybernetics helped anthropologists move away from striving for pure objectivity and acknowledge that their own biases and assumptions inevitably influence their understanding of other cultures.
So instead of pretending to be neutral, detached observers, they started to recognize their own role in co-creating the knowledge they were seeking.
That's a key shift. Clifford Geertz, a famous anthropologist, described anthropological writings as fictions, not in the sense of being false, but in the sense of being something made, something shaped by the observer's interaction with the culture being studied.
That's an interesting way to put it. It's like those optical illusions, where the same image can be seen in two different ways, depending on how you look at it. The image itself is still there, but our perception is shaped by our own minds.
A perfect analogy. And this realization led to a more participatory approach to anthropology, where researchers actively engage with the culture they're studying, recognizing that true understanding requires empathy and a willingness to see the world through another's eyes.
So it's less about detached observation and more about active participation and understanding. That seems like a much richer way to approach the study of culture.
It is. And this shift towards recognizing the observer's role also impacted sociology. Niklas Luhmann, a German sociologist, applied Maturana's concept of autopoiesis to his understanding of social systems.
So he was looking at society as a whole, not just individuals within a society.
Precisely. He saw society as a self-creating, self-regulating system, a network of communications that constantly produces and reproduces itself through interactions between individuals.
So instead of just being a collection of individuals, society is actually a system in itself. A system that shapes the individuals within it.
That's right. And Luhmann emphasized that these interactions are driven by internal logic and self-reference, rather than just responding to external events.
So society isn't just reacting. It's actively creating its own reality through communication and interactions. That's fascinating, but also a bit complex. How does this connect back to individual knowledge creation?
Luhmann's work, while complex, highlights how our individual understanding of the world is deeply intertwined with the social systems we're a part of. These systems shape our language, our values, and even our perception of reality. We construct knowledge not in isolation, but within a social context.
That's a good point. We're constantly being influenced by the people and systems around us.
Okay, so we've seen how cybernetics has impacted anthropology and sociology. What other fields have been influenced by this way of thinking?
Cybernetics has also revolutionized psychotherapy, challenging traditional views of mental illness. This is where things get really personal. As mental health is something that touches everyone's life in some way. Absolutely. And this idea of knowledge as a construction seems particularly relevant. We're talking about mental health, after all.
Mm.
Everyone experiences the world differently, and what might seem normal to one person might be completely different for someone else.
Exactly. Cybernetics, particularly constructivism, led to a major shift in psychotherapy. Instead of viewing mental illness as an objective dysfunction, therapists started to see it as a reflection of an individual's unique construction of reality.
So instead of saying this person is mentally ill because their thoughts and behaviors don't align with some external standard, therapists started to ask, what is this person's internal world like, and how is it shaping their experience?
That's the core of it. And research challenged the idea of perfectly objective psychiatric diagnoses. Studies showed that even experienced clinicians can be influenced by their own biases when observing and interpreting a patient's behavior.
That's a little unsettling, to be honest. It makes you wonder how much subjectivity plays a role in diagnoses.
It's a valid concern. And this realization led to greater emphasis on understanding the patient's subjective experience. Their reality might be different from the therapist's or society's, but it's still valid and meaningful within their own internal world.
So it's about meeting people where they are, understanding their unique perspectives, rather than trying to fit them into predefined categories.
Precisely. And this led to therapeutic approaches that focus on exploring the patient's internal world, helping them understand their own patterns of thinking and behaving, and finding ways to create more fulfilling ways of being in the world.
This sounds much more empowering than simply labeling someone as mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
It's about helping them understand and shape their own experience.
Exactly. And one area where this has been influential is family therapy. Family therapists, inspired by cybernetic concepts like autopoiesis and constructivism, started to see families as complex systems where each member creates their own reality of the family dynamic.
So instead of focusing on one problem individual, they look at the whole family system and how everyone is interacting and contributing to the overall dynamic.
That's right. They recognize that conflicts often arise from the clash of these different realities, from misunderstandings, misinterpretations, and differing ways of making sense of the same events.
This makes so much sense. Families have their own unspoken languages, their own sets of rules and meanings. And when those rules clash, things can get messy.
Indeed. Family therapists use these insights to help families communicate better, understand each other's perspectives, and create a more harmonious family system. It's about recognizing that each family member is constructing their own reality and finding ways to bridge those realities through communication and empathy.
Wow, we've gone from steam engines to family therapy. It's amazing how this cybernetic way of thinking has impacted so many different fields. But there's one area I'm particularly interested in: education. How has this idea of knowledge as a construction changed how we think about teaching and learning?
That's a great question, and probably the most relevant for our listener. After all, we all went through some kind of education system, and many of us are still learning every day. So how has this cybernetic shift impacted the world of education?
It's been transformative. The idea that knowledge is actively constructed, not passively received, challenged. Traditional teaching methods that relied on rote memorization and lectures, educators started to see students not as empty vessels to be filled, but as active agents in their own learning process.
So instead of just lecturing at students and expecting them to absorb everything, the focus shifted towards creating a more engaging learning environment.
Exactly. Constructivist educators emphasize hands-on learning, problem solving, and critical thinking. They encourage students to ask questions, challenge assumptions, and build their own understanding through direct experience. That sounds a lot more engaging than just sitting in a lecture hall taking notes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of some of my favorite classes in school, the ones where we got to do experiments, work on projects, and really dive into the material.
Those are often the classes we remember most vividly because we are actively involved in the learning process. And there's growing evidence that constructivist teaching methods lead to deeper learning, better retention, and more motivation. When students are actively constructing their own knowledge, they become more invested in the process and excited about learning.
It makes sense. When you're actively engaged in making discoveries for yourself, learning becomes an adventure, not a chore. But this approach requires more from teachers, doesn't it? It's probably easier to just stand up and deliver a lecture.
It does require a different mindset and skill set. Constructivist educators need to be facilitators, guides, and co-learners rather than just dispensers of information. They create environments that are safe for exploration and experimentation and even making mistakes.
So it's less about being the sage on the stage and more about being the guide on the side.
That's a great way to put it. But this approach also presents challenges, especially when it comes to assessment. Traditional tests that focus on memorizing facts don't really measure understanding or the ability to apply knowledge.
So how do you evaluate learning in a constructivist framework?
Yeah.
How do you know if students are actually constructing their own knowledge and developing critical thinking skills?
It requires more creative and authentic forms of assessment, like project-based learning portfolios and performance-based tasks. The focus shifts from measuring right or wrong answers to evaluating how students approach problems, think critically, and apply their knowledge to real-world situations.
This sounds more aligned with how we actually use knowledge in our lives. It's not about memorizing facts, but about being able to solve problems, think critically, and adapt to new situations.
Exactly. And that's what constructivist education aims to foster. It's about empowering students to become lifelong learners, equipped with the skills and mindset to navigate a constantly changing world.
Wow, this has been quite a journey. We've gone from steam engines and feedback loops to the very nature of knowledge, culture, society, and education. It's amazing how cybernetics has touched so many aspects of human experience.
It all comes back to that fundamental shift in perspective, recognizing that we are not passive recipients of knowledge, but active constructors of our own realities, and that realization has ripple effects across every aspect of our lives.
It's mind-blowing to think that diving deep into feedback loops could lead us to question the very nature of reality itself and how we understand the world around us. But as we wrap up this deep dive, I have to ask, what does it all mean for our listener? Why should they care about all this?
That's the crucial question, because knowledge without application is like a seed that never gets planted. So what can our listener take away from this exploration of cybernetics? I think the most important takeaway is to be aware of your role as an active constructor of knowledge. Recognize that you're not just passively absorbing information. You're filtering it through your own unique experiences and mental models.
So be more mindful of the lens through which you are viewing the world.
Exactly. Question your assumptions. Challenge your biases. Be open to different perspectives. Embrace the fact that there isn't one single objective truth out there, but rather multiple equally valid realities.
This makes you realize the importance of empathy and dialogue, right? If we're all constructing our own realities, then understanding each other requires a willingness to step into each other's worlds.
Absolutely. And it also highlights the importance of taking responsibility for your own understanding. Don't just blindly accept what you're told or what you read. Engage critically with information, ask questions, and form your own conclusions.
It's like that quote often attributed to Buddha. Believe nothing, no matter where you read it or who said it, no matter if I have said it, unless it agrees with your own reason and your own common sense.
That sums it up perfectly. This critical engagement is more important than ever in today's world, where we're constantly bombarded with information from all sides. Cybernetics gives us the tools to navigate this information, overload discern patterns, and make informed decisions based on our own understanding.
It's like cybernetics is a mental martial art, helping us defend against manipulation and misinformation by honing our critical thinking skills. But beyond the critical thinking aspect, is there a more personal takeaway from all of this?
Cybernetics encourages us to see ourselves as active agents in our own lives, not just reacting to circumstances, but shaping them, creating our own realities through choices and actions.
This deep dive has definitely been a wake-up call, making me realize how much power I have in shaping my own understanding and my own experience of the world. It's a bit daunting, but also incredibly empowering.
It is both, and it brings us to the end of our deep dive into cybernetics and knowledge creation.
This has been one incredible deep dive. A huge thanks to our expert for guiding us through this fascinating and thought-provoking landscape. And to you, our listener, keep those mental gears turning. And remember, you are the architect of your own understanding. Until next time, keep diving.